And heavy heading into the part of the show where you take over and your questions, your comments for Dr. Pim Van Lommel. Now, as he said, you know, there are people who are atheists who have an afterlife memory. That is, they died, their heart stopped, their brain stopped, they were dead. And they have a near-death experience, which then they have to try to process from a whole new perspective. And maybe that's what a lot of you are going through right now. You're hearing us on Coast to Coast, and you're reconsidering whether or not this is at all possible. Well, it is scientifically proven to have happened. Does that mean it'll happen to you? I don't know. I hope you don't experience cardiac arrest anytime soon. But if you did, I would be more surprised if you didn't have a near-death experience. That's what you'll learn if you read this book from Dr. Pim Van Lommel, 25 years of research into near-death experiences, focusing specifically on cardiac arrest patients, but it involves a wide spectrum of other studies as well. It is comprehensive and yet incredibly enjoyable to read. And you'll find Dr. Pim Van Lommel's book, Consciousness Beyond Life, by linking up to him at coasttocoastam.com and by linking up to him with an open line, which I'll try and find you coming up next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Ponet. So before we get to the calls, and I know that many people there are dying to talk with Dr. Pim Van Lommel, if you'll pardon the expression, tell me about Jesus. Tell me about the typical Christian expectation of the near-death experience.
Yeah. So, well, Christian people have the meeting with this being of light. They tell me that they met Jesus. But an atheist will tell me that they have met a being of light. And children will mostly tell that they have seen an angel of light. And Catholics will sometimes tell me that they saw Maria. And Buddhists will tell that they saw Buddha. So it is an overwhelming feeling of unconditional love and wisdom and acceptance and compassion, and they will try to give it a name out of their own references, as their own culture and their own religion.
But they don't see, I mean, they see the light and they associate, say, Jesus or Buddha, but they don't see an image of Jesus.
Oh, yeah,
per se.
They can see an image as well. They tell me I saw the image of Jesus and I had a communication with him. And in this communication, they mostly see also their life review of their life preview. They see future events as well.
What about Muslims?
Well, I have talked to some of them, and they have also talked about the heavenly environment, non-worldly, so they like heaven. And they tell me that they saw Allah. So it's also for them, what we call God is for them Allah.
Right.
So they give it their own name, depending on their own background, their own culture, their own religion.
And as far as atheists are concerned, is there a higher percentage of them, too, that will then take up an interest in spirituality as a result of it?
The change is always there. But it's hard to accept for them as well that these things can happen. Because they don't accept it even more harder than we do. And there has been an inquiry throughout Europe by the University of Tilburg, and the average, about 50% of the people in Europe, 250 million people, believe in some kind of life after death. But in the former East Germany, it was 15%. So the expectation of a life after death is much, much lower there.
In the former Soviet Union
East Germany.
Right. But formerly part of the East Germany, you know, part of the whole sort of godless communism sort of thing. Okay. We're talking with Dr. Pim Van Lommel, who's taking your calls. This is Robert in Ventura, California, on a wild card line on Coast to Coast. Robert?
Yes, I want to confirm what the doctor is saying. I had a relative. It was a long publication. He died in the 1800s, late 1800s. He apparently had cancer. And as he was a Christian leader, and as he died, his pain completely left him. He apparently was dying of cancer. And his last words were, "It's so beautiful." On the other side, I have a mother, or had a mother, who went through a near-death experience of a serious illness. It was life-threatening. They were doing surgery, thought they would probably see gangrene in her intestines and then would close her up and put her on morphine while she died. She said later on, it was very similar to the story in the Bible of the rich man and the poor man. She happened to be a rather rich woman. She was talked about being held in a place she didn't want to be, with people with sort of closed eyes that were holding her, and she could see a gulf in the place where she wanted to be, and she couldn't get there. So, you've got the good and the bad of it.
About that? Go ahead, Dr. Van Lommel.
Yeah, well, the first experience is what we call a deathbed vision or end-of-life experience. So people in the end of their life can experience what you can also call a near-death experience, but it's an end-of-life experience, where they have the same components, and let's say the meeting of deceased relatives.
They have the same vocabulary. They use the same words
and
to describe.
The difference is that in the near-death experience, you're unconscious. But in the end-of-life experience, you have at the same time your waking consciousness and this enhanced consciousness. So they can tell what they experience. They also, children, in the last minutes of their life, they can say, "Oh, there's my grandmother. Oh, there's Jesus or an angel coming." So they can share their experience with others at the same moment.
It's sort of like the story we had read earlier from Pamela Reynolds. It's in your book, Consciousness Beyond Life, that that things were sparkly, that life was, there were sparkles to the light. And that's where I think where you'll hear people talk about in their deathbed that the light takes on a different texture and looks dramatically different. Let's go to Eugene, Oregon, where Mike is online on a wild card line on Coast to Coast. Mike?
Yes, Dr. Pym, I was calling to see what you thought about
Look out for that train, Mike.
Yeah, there's a train.
A little worried about you. Just pay attention to that train first, okay?
I'm a few feet away.
Okay.
I was.
No, you're not.
It's closed. It's 40 feet.
Okay.
But it's far outside of my zone. But it may infringe on yours.
Well, just don't be getting any closer to the light, okay? Just stay with us, Mike.
Well, Dr. Pym, I wanted to ask you if you ever encountered any people that relayed something to you along the lines of where they sort of lost their cool, they were frustrated, they wanted to wake people up who they felt, you know, weren't acknowledging things that may impact them in the future. And they did exhibit, frustration towards them.
I'm not sure I understand what you mean, Mike, and I'm trying to understand.
Well, what I mean is, if you lose your temper, if you inflict emotional pain on people and you relive this in your flashback, your intent was good, but you lost your cool.
Okay, interesting. I'm going to put you on hold because the noise is getting louder in the background. I understand what he means now.
What you hear from people, it's about the attention. Intention is the major aspect of what you do or what you think, what you feel. When you want to help your neighbor because you want to be accepted, that's the wrong intention. When you want to help people because you want to help them, that is the right intention. And you are aware of this difference during your near-death experience.
You know, so much of anger is tied to a feeling of self-respect that you can usually trace an anger flash back to a feeling of not being respected. And people that tend to lose their temper a lot have a struggle with the idea of being respected. And so I think that's one of those intentional things. You may have, your intent may be to help somebody, but if it's coming out through a lens or a filter of you're not respecting me, then that colors your intention. Would you say that's fair?
No, I think the intention is without any surrounding meaning. It's really about your attention. But what is important as well, which you mentioned, that when the people come back from their near-death experience, the first thing they have learned is to accept and to have compassion and empathy to oneself. If you're able to do that, then you can have compassion and empathy to others as well. You have to start to accept yourself, and that's not easy at all.
And to forgive yourself.
Exactly.
In a way. All right. Bill is in West Hartford, Connecticut, on Coast to Coast. Bill?
Yes. Hi, doctor. Doctor, I'm a scientific-minded atheist myself, and I have first a quick scientific clarification for you and then two quick questions, and then I'll hang up and listen to your answers.
Yeah.
The clarification is, instead of saying life after death, because, you know, as a doctor, life means biology, circulatory system, respiratory system, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I would say the word should be consciousness or awareness or existence after death. That's my clarification.
I totally agree with you. I never use the word life after death. I talk about the continuity of our consciousness. But Ian put it that way about after the life. But I never use this word.
Okay. Well, it's right. Bill.
Yes. Yes.
You know I know you well, so you got to keep a grip. Remember, the book is called Consciousness Beyond Life.
Yeah.
So you're not correcting the doctor. And I use the term life after death because so many people see the physical ending of life as being a life experience ending. So I'm using the more common term.
Correct.
So,
now to my questions. Question number one, in physics and in cosmology, we're getting to the point now where we're talking about the possibility of other dimensions in physics and in cosmology, other universes, the multiverse. Question number two, could these two things, the multiverse, many universes, many dimensions, be where this other realm is that the consciousness goes to? And question number three.
No. You don't get a question number three. Number two, that's what you get. Okay,
I'll try to answer. I have an old chapter written about quantum physics, and it's a different kind. It's what I have the non-locality concept. That means everything is connected instantaneously without time, without space. And there are some theories as well, like the string theory, who has multi-dimensions. I don't know the answer, but I think there is the non-locality as well is not possible in our Newtonian, old-fashioned classical physics. So we need another physics, like quantum physics, to understand this dimension without our conventional concepts of time and space.
Yeah, I think that's really important, too, especially to go back to what you were saying about the difference between the physical chronology of time and then they were having, you know, days' worth of mental experiences packed into just 30 minutes of lost human time. Let's go to Jenny, first-time caller for Dr. Pim Van Lommel on Coast to Coast. Jenny?
Hi. I had a near-death experience when I was 13 that I thought I would share with you guys. When I was 13, I, for some reason, decided that I wanted to kill myself and was quite successful, and I went into congestive heart failure. And I had emailed a friend on the other side of the country who had called the police, and because it was in a very small town, one of the deputies who knew me, just as a friend, whatever. She heard the call in the scanner, and she was the first person there, and apparently I was already dead. But I remember everything, but from like kind of a movie point of view. Like I remember, I can still to this day, the shirt she was wearing, what she was saying. I remember when my mom got there and like all the ambulance crew trying to keep her out because I was dead. And at the point where they were trying to use defibrillators on me, I don't remember anything. And apparently I stayed kind of gone for about 3 minutes. And what I do remember was just a lot of color. And my father passed away when I was much younger, and He's who I ran into, and
how did that change? Go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't know you went down. I'm sorry.
He wasn't upset or anything, but he was just like, "Why are you here? You can't be here. You have to go back." And that's the last thing I remember. And I was in a coma for a week after that. And I guess the first thing I said when I woke up was, "Where's my dad?" And that was kind of weird for everybody, I guess.
How did it change your perspective on the circumstances that led you to feel like life was not worth living?
I guess I just felt like I was supposed to be here because, you know, apparently I was gone for a long time, I guess. And so I guess, like, the feeling that I've had since then, I'm almost 26 now, is that, like, I'm supposed to do something. I'm not really sure what that is, but I'm just supposed to be here.
Wait. You're not alone in that. The research, Jenny, says a lot of people who have the feeling that they're supposed to do something don't always figure out what that something is, right, Dr. Van Lommel?
Yes, and it was a very impressive story. Thank you so much for sharing it with us. I think perhaps just sharing this story from you with others could be your task as well.
just the simple act of you sharing the story, Jenny.
Yeah.
Well, you know, like, I am studying social work now, so maybe that's what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm not sure. I should be working on my finals right now, but I've been
Well, don't neglect your studies. Thank you, Jenny.
We
appreciate that. Glad to know you're listening and you're still with us. Also in Connecticut, this is Jim on Coast to Coast. Jim?
Hey, how you doing, Ian?
Good. You're talking with Dr. Pim Van Lommel.
Pim, how you doing? I got some sound effects for you guys. I'm Jim in the truck. This is two for you.
There you go. Thank you.
Anyway, you know, the Bible says there's one God and one mediator between God and man, the man Christ Jesus. So Allah's not a mediator. Buddha's not a mediator. Jesus Christ said, unless you believe that I am he, you're going to die in your sins. I mean, now you said, Ian, that the Bible doesn't talk about hell that much. Well, I'll tell you right now, Jesus spoke about hell more than anywhere in the Bible. All right? He said that He is the way, the truth, and the life. I mean, if you're not going to believe that Jesus...
But that's not the hell experience that most people talk about. So, Jim, when I say that, I mean, a lot of our images of hell are informed by literature that comes long after the Bible. So that's the point of that, is that, you know, people have these images of hell, and they're contrary to what the majority of the Bible testifies to. So you're imposing that image into the Bible, and that's called exegesis. Eisegesis, when you take something from the outside and put it in. But
taking something outside the Bible and putting it in.
Yeah, when you use images outside of what the Bible says and you retrofit them into the Bible actually has some very specific images of what death was supposed to be like. And hell, you know, is sort of a later understanding in the timeline. But his you know, Jim wanted to say, you know, Jesus is the only way. What research do you have, Dr. Van Lommel, from people who have been through the near-death experience who come back and say, oh, Jesus is the only way, or do they come back and they say there are other mediators or other connections?
Well, I can give a good answer to this because people have their own experience, and they as I told before, some people tell me that they had a being of light with unconditional love, and others say it was Jesus with unconditional love. So the other and children say it was an angel with unconditional love. So we just try to give a name to something that is ineffable as well. It's beyond our conceptions, beyond our imagination.
And it's beyond our ability as non-experiencers to really get the full grasp of what the near-death experiencer went through. We'll pick it up right there. Thank you all for being patient. I know a lot of people have been waiting maybe a half hour to get on with Dr. Pim Van Lommel. It'll be as soon as we can arrange it coming up next. And we'll get you an open line if you're trying to call on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. So coming back for more questions and comments for Dr. Pim Van Lommel. He's the author of Consciousness Beyond Life, The Science of the Near-Death Experience. And, you know, going back to something that a previous caller had talked about, that Jesus was – the only way to understand an afterlife. I don't think that will be confirmed by reading this book. Maybe Jim shouldn't read this book, because non-Christians have the same experience. And yes, our lens is very important, and the way in which we talk about the Christ experience, from my perspective as a Christian, is very central to who I am every day. But I think it's also comforting to know that, you know, as they say, in my Father's house, there are many mansions. And that is one of the morals of the story of consciousness beyond life. 25 years of research into near-death experiences. Dr. Pim Van Lommel takes your questions and comments next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. Well, we left off with Jem in California on Coast to Coast for Dr. Pim Van Lommel. Jem?
Hi. I have an experience and then a question, but first I want to say that my sister just passed away. She was hit on the head by someone who was angry because she didn't feel respected. And 4 days later, she died in her sleep of a subdural hematoma.
So sorry.
Thank you. Last 2 years, I've had 4 major surgeries, and I had a very bad reaction to the anesthesia where it would take me about 5 months before I could sleep normally, and then I'd have another surgery about every 6 months. And so I had extreme sleep deprivation, and also I use a CPAP machine, which is a breathing machine at night, and the hose was full of holes, and I couldn't afford a new one. So basically, I went into dreaming while I was awake, which they call psychosis, and so it wasn't, you know, anything organically wrong with my brain. It was a lack of oxygen and sleep deprivation, and I went into a kind of a hell, and where I experienced terrible guilt and explored every dark corner of my psyche. And when I came out of it and I became well, or weller than well, I like to say, I was completely transformed, different. I feel like a completely different person than I was before. I'm filled with love and joy of life, and my life has expanded greatly. And I don't know how that compares with a near-death experience, but it felt like I was near death the whole time. And the question I have is, one of my biggest fears was that when you experience the life review, whether it will seem like it takes as long as your actual life, whether you actually have to live it all over again. And I know there's no time on the other side, but that was one of my worries when I was in the psychosis, you know.
All right. Well, Dr. Van Lommel, what would you say to that?
Yeah, well, first, thank you for your sharing this experience with us. You don't have to be near death to have such kind of experiences. You can have it in depression and existential crisis and meditation and isolation and sleep deprivation as well. So it is a near-death experience. In your case, it was a frightening experience. And the change you feel now, your transformation, is classical for a near-death experience as well. So and during a life review, all the important aspects of giving love or the lack of love, you feel again, you see again, you experience again, and it gives you a kind of insight. And that's it. It's just about insight and nothing else.
And the time sequence.
There's mostly a time sequence from birth on until the last moment, until the experience starts. But there are some people who have it the other way around, in that the life review starts at the moment they had a cardiac arrest, and then it goes back to birth.
Okay. Let's go to, hang in there, Jim, too. Sorry about your sister again. This is Jim in Gulfport, Mississippi, on Coast to Coast. Jim, you're talking with Dr. Pim Van Lommel.
Thank you very much. The first thing I'd like to say is, Jenny, you're not alone. We love you. You hang in there, girl. You did a good job.
That's sweet of you.
Ian, I got a question for you. I was in a Baptist college, and the way hell was explained to me was that Jesus was preaching outside of a city wall, and they had a refuge pit there, and they burned the refuse in the city, and they used sulfur and brimstone to keep the fires hot. And he pronounced to the people through a parable that this is the way your soul would be through eternity if you rejected God. So I want you to address that. But, Doctor, I've been waiting for you to come along a long time. I've been studying religions. I'm like Joseph Smith. I was always searching for the right religion. But I've been studying different theologies for years. Catholicism, Pentecostal, Judaism, Hutterite, Mennonite. I've been through quite a few of them. But I've come to the conclusion that hell is not, as you say, a physical thing. That once you pass from this life, you're into, I guess you would call the spirit realm, and you can't freeze a spirit, you can't starve a spirit, a spirit can't die of thirst. What would a spirit crave? You know, I've been through the Bible thumping, podium pounding preachers. I'm an older man for most of my life.
Okay.
And, streets of gold, you know, buffets okay. and all this stuff. I don't go for it. Well, I don't think a spirit needs all of that.
Well, let's
say what
let's,
the spirit needs is the difference between light and dark. And before I leave, I'd like to say good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever you are.
Okay.
Thank you, gentlemen.
All right, Jim. So, is there a theology to the life, to the near death experience? Is there anything that you could even categorize as being kind of a consistent theology about God?
I think the word God is just for Christians. And you have Krishna and Buddha and Allah and whatever words, or Yahweh for the Jewish. And I have written a chapter, There's Nothing New Under the Sun. And it's about all the different religions in the world and the different times and cultures. And they have their own concepts. They are basically the same. That is, it's all about love, about exception, about compassion. And so I think there's a common aspect in all religions, and it's all about love.
All about love. That's so pretty much the Beatles got that right.
And, yes.
Yeah. Let it go to Chris in Mississippi, wildcard line on Coast to Coast. Chris?
Yeah, it's an honor to talk to y'all tonight. I have been in I've had an out-of-body experience or a near-death experience. Actually, I was having open-heart surgery at the time. Mm-hmm. Before this, I'd been run over by a truck, had broken my back, my neck, all these other different things, and I've had eyesight problems all my life. But this was during an open-heart surgery, and I could see myself going above the surgery and everything and listening to the doctor. And then I heard the doctor say, oh, well, and he said a vulgarity, which is highly unlike them. And everything started going crazy in there with the paddles and stuff. And then I started noticing that the room was getting dimmer and I was getting kind of farther away. And I turned around. I was in this long tunnel, you know. And I saw the light, started going toward the light. And you're talking about a man here who's been legally blind his entire life, three-quarters deaf. Has had back pain, leg pain, but all of a sudden I just felt this intense, like every cell of my being, whatever it was at that time, was being loved from this light. This light was emanating love, but not only was I being loved, every cell in my body was wanting to give off love. I guess
sure.
They give love
interesting.
Back. And I've, like I say, I'm blind now and everything. But I got as close to the light as I could get, and I had a fiance who had just accepted my proposal one afternoon and got killed in a car wreck that night.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it was horrible, and I've led a tough life. I've had a lot of different surgeries. I've had a lot of different eye surgeries.
Right.
Things like that. But I want to say that it's the greatest experience of my life yet. It's one of the saddest because they said that I'm not through, my chore's not done yet, and I had to go back. And even though I got to see, it was like I was there for a week.
Right.
All these people.
I think you're going to, if there's access to somebody, if there's an audio book version of Consciousness Beyond Life, you need this because it'll confirm all these things that you've already talked about, or have somebody read it to you because you're going to want to hear what's in this book. Dr. Pym?
Yes, it was very impressive. And it's also from a scientific point of view, how is it possible to have an enhanced consciousness during heart surgery? You have general anesthesia, you have a cardiac arrest with the heart-lung machine, and so it's according to our current medical science, it's impossible to have this kind of experiences. So consciousness is not located inside your brain, it's not inside your body, and consciousness is non-local, without time, without space. It's a totally different kind of consciousness as we experience, as we are in our body.
Stephen is in Ohio on Coast to Coast for Dr. Pym van Lommel. Stephen?
Good morning, gentlemen. It's a privilege to be on the radio station with you guys. I'm a born-again Christian, and Jesus Christ is, he was crucified, he died, and he rose again. He's alive. And the spirit world is more reality than this present world, this physical world that we live in. So we're spiritual beings in a physical body. And that's why these people are having these experiences, because we're a spiritual being. And my question is the people that have had the near-death experience, do they feel more connected or more conscious or more aware of the spirit world and less connected to why people aren't, in touch with that afterlife, the spirit world? So I hope I made that clear enough.
Thank you for your question. Well, I think it's clear that people who had a near-death experience said death is just the end of your physical aspect, and the essence of who you are is still there. And they don't talk about this spiritual world, but they talk about, let's say, the enhanced consciousness. It's the same. It's the difference in words. But what they mean is that the essence of who you are is always there, has always been there, and will always be there. It's kind of eternity.
You know, I'm reminded of that piece of the research that said that after eight years after the near-death experience, the churchgoer was 42% less likely to go to church.
Yes.
But 8 years after the experience, they were 42% more likely to be interested in spirituality.
Exactly.
And I see that as being that the world becomes their church.
Yes.
Right.
Nature.
Yeah. All that is around them in whatever way they're experiencing it. Let me go to, let's see, we're trying to get on to the people who've been on the longest. From British Columbia in Canada, Megan is on Coast to Coast for Dr. Pym van Lommel. Megan?
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
First, I'd like to say I'm sorry for Jenny's loss.
Yes.
And I wanted to ask the doctor, I want to get your take on something. I know somebody. He worships the devil. He's not a friend or anything, but he worships the devil. And he has died four times. And every time he has died, he was dead over half an hour. And he came back to life. I'd just like to get your take on that.
Well, I'm sort of curious right there. Does he tell you of any consciousness beyond life experience?
I have to be honest, I have never talked to him about it because of how he lives.
Okay.
It makes me very uncomfortable.
I understand. All right. Dr. Pym van Lommel, did you ever study anybody who was a devil worshiper who had a near-death experience?
No, I don't know. But the first thing also is that I have scientific doubts about the fact that he died four times for 30 minutes, because they are really, let's say, clinical death because of cardiac arrest, the brain is irreversible damage after 10 minutes. So I can't believe that he really died for 30 minutes four times.
All right. Well, let's say he's exaggerating
Yes.
He died four times, or four times he's, you know, his heart stopped and he had to be, for whatever reason.
I don't believe his heart stops. He must have been perhaps fainting or something.
Okay.
But when your heart stops, you have to be resuscitated to come back. Otherwise, you'll die.
Okay. Let's go to Florida, Jay, on Coast to Coast. Jay?
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hey.
Good morning. I was a police officer many years ago, and I was an atheist. I was a former military, and I was involved in a shootout which left me for dead on the side of the road.
Mm.
And my NDE goes through three stages. May I explain them?
Quickly. We have a lot
sure,
of people
of
waiting
course.
To get on.
Well, I went to the first stage. I was out of my body. I ended up at my house, and I was wondering if I was a dream state, and I was wondering if I was out of my body or so, and I found myself back inside the fire rescue truck. And there I was bleeding to death, and when I passed out, I found myself inside a place, like a Roman place, and it was a hooded figure right in front of me. I don't know what was said or anything, but he was pointing towards a mummified body on the floor, and as I crossed over, I woke up and went back in my body. And then I realized that everything that we are all one. I realized that everything that I was told was false, and that we all share the same humanity. And what I took out of this near-death experience, a valuable lesson from this near-death experience, that we are all one. And I want to tell you, Doctor, that your work is incredible because it's exactly what I learned after 6 years of college. I realized that it went well.
Well, that's very good. Well, I think you'll particularly enjoy the book, and I'm sorry for what happened to you, and I'm glad you survived that.
I think it's very, very important because it's here in this physical world, you have to subject and object. But when you are in the other dimension, everything is one. Everything is interconnected, and everything is one. And that's what the people tell as well. They feel when they are back, they feel connected to the other person. They feel connected to nature. They feel connected to planet Earth because they feel everything is one.
Dennis is hanging on Coast to Coast. Dennis?
Hey, Ian. Hey, Dr. Van Lommel. I'm a trained spiritual energy worker, and I keyed into what Ian said. Ian talked about people having no consciousness at all, and then under medical evaluation having the consciousness of their life. It seems to me this program is an argument for our multidimensional existence, or in esoteric teachings, our multiple vehicles of existence, that we do not merely exist as physical beings, that we have multiple levels or layers to our being, that death is not the end. That as hospice nurse Elisa Alchuk-Hecky discussed with George on July 30th, she said this reveals our true nature as spiritual beings having a human experience rather than human beings having a spiritual experience.
Well, that's a fair way of looking at it. Yeah,
yeah. I think most people with an NDE agree with you. They say the essence of who we are is our essence, our consciousness, our spiritual being. And our physical body is just an aspect of our physical life. It's not the other aspect, the essence of our consciousness is internal.
Loved how you've written the book. And for our purposes here, too, loved how you've handled the conversation. Thank you so much, Dr. Pim Van Lommel. I know you're a busy man, so thank you for making this much time for us. It really makes a difference. And I know that many, many more thousands of people will read your book as a result of the time you took tonight.
Thank you very much for your good questions and for your nice introduction.
Well, you're very sweet. And thank you, too, to everybody else who we left on hold. Sorry we couldn't get to everybody, but we'll get back to this subject sometime. And I know we'll get Dr. Van Lommel back on again someday. Vaccine A coming up for this coming Saturday night. The covert government experiment that's killing our soldiers and why GIs are just the first victims this coming Saturday. Deus Tiamat, and I do too.